Welcome into a new special episode of Buff Stampede Radio. Adam Ostertiger, the publisher of BuffStampede.com, joined by Justin Adams. Justin, you and I have gone back a long way around CU. For the folks out there that are not familiar with your work, you are a former Denver Public League champion under Oliver Lucas at
Yes, sir.
Montbello,
Yes, sir.
a former Colorado tight end.
Yes,
A
sir.
former Buffs journalism student, a current CBS News, Colorado anchor and media member, and just an all-around great person.
Thank
Good to
you.
have you on.
Brother, I appreciate you so much, Adam. If I wanted to add a little bit to that, right?
Oh,
Because
yeah, let's go. Let's
not like
go.
there's not enough, right? I also do work for play-by-play broadcasting, so I've done work with the Pac-12 Network, which is a great story. I would love to tell you. Shout out to Rick George also for that. But Pac-12 Network, Mountain West Network, and also Altitude Sports and Entertainment, and also I'm on a Sirius XM with a show called The Fix Radio Show on Holy Culture Radio. So I do a faith and sports report, and so it's awesome to be able to do that in so many different platforms.
Yeah, so you've always kind of had that entrepreneurial kind of spirit to you. What kind of like grew in you? Has that always been there? That fire to want to do a lot of different things?
It has been. And actually, it's funny. It actually really got going once I was at CU. I walked on at CU. And so I'll just be honest, man. I'm 6'1", 230, soaking wet. And so the first guy where we had full pads, I went up against a guy by the name of Brian Iwu, who played several years in the NFL. And I just remember reading about how he gained 15 pounds of muscle before the season. So I'm like, all right, whatever. Football's football. You stay low, shoot your hands, shoot your hips. We're on a board drill, like you'll be fine. Okay. And board drill is where it's just offensive guy, defensive guy, and you just pretty much mano a mano try to push the guy out the way, right? And I just remember that I did everything I thought I was supposed to do. Stayed low, shot my hands and everything. And then I was moving backwards. And I was like, what the heck is going on? And so what that quickly taught me, when you talk about the entrepreneur spirit, is that I knew that I had to work harder than everybody else in order to get any opportunity. In order to get a shot to be on the field, I had to work harder than everybody else. In order to even get a chance on air, on TV, I have to work harder. And so that's always the spirit that I had, was that entrepreneurial spirit to be able to, whether it's on TV, on radio, or wherever it can be, I always wanted to be the guy who put his best foot forward. So definitely that has helped me out a lot within my career.
I can't wait to kind of break down all these facets of just your media entity and what you've done from an experience standpoint. I do remember the first time I met you was after you were transitioning from playing football over to media. And if memory serves, that was like 06, 07.
Yep. So played from 2004 to 2006. 2006 was the year, first year Dan Hawkins was able to go get on the field that year myself. And after that season, I had a decision to make where it was, do you continue to go after football with 2 years left of eligibility for me, or do I go and get this degree? And I remember just talking to a lot of friends of mine and people who have been walk-ons as well. And the main thing that came out was, you didn't come here to play football. You came here to get a degree. And so as much as I love football and have my regrets of walking away early, it has definitely been a tremendous decision to be able to go and say, hey, go get that degree, go get this and secure your future. And so yeah, that's definitely where we met up.
And I was sitting next to you in that first post game press conference you were at, and the players come in there and they're going, "What's he doing over there?"
Yes. You know what's funny? It's trying to be serious and ask journalistic questions, and I'm gonna have the hard questions or whatever. And I just remember every time, like Cody Hawkins was the quarterback at the time. And I remember I asked him a question, he'll be like, sure, crease. So that was my nickname. Not please, crease. And so he'll kind of look at me and chuckle. And I'm like, I'm trying to be serious here, guys. Like, it can't be something. So it was really cool.
Going back to high school, playing for Oliver Lucas, what was that like at Montbello?
Awesome. It was a great it taught me, now looking back at it, it taught me really what college football was all about at the high school level. And I didn't realize the guys that we had on our coaching staff. JJ Flanagan was our special teams coach. Alfred Williams would come down, after doing radio, he'll come down from time to time to be able to help us. Art Williams, Not Art Williams, Art Arthur Walker, excuse me. He would come down and he was our D-line coach. And so you look at all the guys on our roster, and then I'm like, why are we always playing videos of the 1991, 1990 championship? Like, why are we always doing this? Like, why are we? It's like, oh, because all the guys who are on the staff as our coaches are coaching us right now who played on that team. And so it was just such a neat opportunity to be there. So neat to be able to see Oliver Lucas and how he put that program together, was there for several years, and we thrived. We didn't win state championship, but it was an opportunity to be able to thrive. And it really helped me when I was able to go to CU to understand, hey, this is the way how you prepare and how you carry yourself as a college football player.
Drew Davis and you didn't overlap at all in high school, right? In
One year.
Montbello?
We
One year.
did.
One year.
So he
Okay.
was a freshman. Great story with him. And so, how about this? I'm, senior, right? Doing my thing. And our backup tight end was Drew Davis. No joke.
Really?
In the first couple of practices. Yeah.
Great, great athlete. Great
Oh my
athlete.
God. Great athlete, big kid, but a tremendous intellect. And that's the one thing that set himself apart too, because yeah, he was great, went to Oregon, had a chance to come to CU, and at the time things were going too well at CU. And so I was like, look, man, I remember 06, I was like, hey, you know what, you could come here and play at Colorado, it would be great, but here's an opportunity for you to be able to branch out. And we've built up a bond, we've built up a relationship. I'm like, hey man, go ahead and go to Oregon. You like build your own path. And it's worked out very well for him. But he was an amazing player, and I really hope that if you haven't heard of Drew Davis, please go look him up. A tremendous talent from Montbello, and he was able to play in the NFL for several years, played a national championship game, a BCS national championship game against Auburn as well, and so was just one of those guys from the 303 who always represented.
I would go watch him play at Mullen, and like they had 11 guys keyed in on Drew Davis, and he would still find a way to make plays. That kid was unbelievable in high school. He really was.
You should have saw him in the weight room. It was like, what is this freshman doing this type of weight in the weight room? And he was dedicated since day one, and it's always paid off.
So, what type of tight end was Justin Adams when he was at Montbello?
The type, I was a better blocker than I was a catcher. I'll put it that way.
Okay,
But
okay.
I love blocking. I really did. I love being able to, get in somebody's kitchen. And it was really understanding angles. That was the thing that really helped me out a lot. And I had some really great coaches. Joseph Short was my tight end coach, and I was always the one where, you put on a film and they say, okay, this is how you block. And they always put tape of me on there as a blocker. And so it was great to be able to do that. The touchdown pass that I had in high school was against Denver South. And so it was the game-winning score as well. Had that in the third quarter. But, we had went up against guys like Calais Campbell and the type of talent that we had to face in those days. Like, it was like, hey, Justin, you got to block that guy. And so it taught me how to really, again, stay low, shoot your hands, being able to go and really just put your face in somebody's chest and do what you got to do to be able to make things happen. And so love being able to block. Start to learn how to, catch the ball better once I got to college, honestly, because it was just was getting adjusted to the speed and understanding that. But man, there is nothing better than seeing some guy who was right in front of you and assisting him by moving him to where he doesn't want to go. There's nothing better in the world than doing that.
You mentioned that Oliver Lucas had shown tape of that 90 championship run. What's going on as you're figuring out how to go to what you're going to do as far as college goes? Like, do you have a preferred walk-on thing at CU? Do you have to go try out? How does that whole process take place?
Yeah, so I was a preferred walk-on, and I wouldn't be at CU if it wasn't for my dad. This is back in the days of VHS, and I remember my dad believing in me so much because I applied to CU, and I was like, okay, I could go there, and I had an opportunity to play at HBCU. I was actually going to go to Alabama State to play football there, and my dad literally took every tape. Now, mind you, this is VHS wise, and made me kind of a resume reel that he sent out to Gary Barnett. I forget the running backs coach at the time, but was able to stay in touch with them. And I worked out hard in the off season. And I just remember I had a meeting with David Hansberg. How about that being a name?
Yeah,
Who's now the
back in the
AD.
day. Yeah.
Yep, now the AD with Colorado School of Mines. And sat down the first time I met Gary Barnett. And he just looked me over. What was it like a let's go and get on the field, anything else? He looked me up and down, looked me over and kind of shook his head. That was it. That was my tryout, right? And I was able to be on the team from there, and it was a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to get beat up, right, as a walk-on, but also to grow to a young man and to learn how to be able to fight and learn how to be able to learn this game at the Division I level and find myself on the field.
So you've seen the good and bad in college football because Colorado had a lot of history. You guys won quite a few games when you were playing for the Buffs, and things kind of started to go downhill at the end of that. When you think back to your college career playing football, what stands out to you?
The highs stand out to me. The friendships 20 years later really stand out to me. To be able to be in a locker room, and I know there's a lot of guys who, frankly, let's be honest, who talk about the importance of the fight song. There is nothing better than after a win being in the locker room and singing that fight song of landing my freshman year. We get done winning the Houston Bowl at the time, which is now the Texas Bowl, and Matt McChesney jumping on the speaker, the intercom and everything on the plane flight as we land down, and we're singing the fight song as we land from coming from Houston. Those are the opportunities, those are the memories that really stand out the most. Those are truly the highs of being able to beat Missouri in 2005, and we were rolling. Even some of the lows too, right? We go to Iowa State in 05, where there's a tornado warning. Like, there's a tornado that touched down, folks, in Ames, Iowa during that game. And I got to clear the field, and on one side you could be able to throw the ball well, on the other side the ball literally dies on you. And even though we lost that game and then subsequently lost against Nebraska and then Texas, it was those opportunities to see how college football really is, from the high point of winning two Big 12 North championships to the low point of seeing a coach that invited you into their program to be let go. And then to see Dan Hawkins being hired the way that he was as well. It was also it was something that was very eye-opening to me of learning about how the college football business was.
I run into Coach Barnett all the time, obviously, traveling with the team now that he's doing play-by-play and not play-by-play, that's Mark Johnson's job. He does the color there. But he just recovered from shoulder surgery. It sounds like he's already back on the golf course. He is addicted to golf, and I love Coach Barnett. When I was a pup reporter back in 03, he called me at like 5 o'clock in the morning to yell at me about something. And by the end of the conversation, it was like once we had kind of come to a mutual agreement, it was like we were good. Like I knew where I stood with Coach Barnett all the time.
Yeah, that's always the place you want to be. And Coach Barnett was so awesome. It still is. Just a wonderful guy who, many coaches don't treat everybody equal. I mean, we know this. I mean, this is how it is in college or any type of team sports in many respects. You say, hey, who are the players who are going to make the plays for the most part on game day? And we got to go and cater to them. He was always the guy who treated you, whether you're the walk-on to the number one starter, always knew your name, always knew something about you, and always was encouraging to you as well. And so the biggest thing I can say about Gary Barnett is this, is that, he told me one time that I believe in you. And I'm like, dude, I'm just walk on guy. I'm still trying to, fill out, physically. And when he said that, it really gave me a lot of confidence to be able to say, okay, you know what? I'm going to learn at this level, and I'm going to be able to one day play at this level. And so that really helped me to be able to grow as a young man.
Taco Bell has officially entered the chicken game and they have brought back their next level chicken nuggets. These premium all white meat chicken nuggets are marinated with bold Mexican spices and coated in a crunchy tortilla chip breading. And a nuggets meal is not complete without adding a great dipping sauce. So Taco Bell has created a collab with Hidden Valley to create its signature Diablo Ranch dipping sauce. This dipping sauce delivers the perfect combination of herb buttermilk ranch with a kick of spice to take these nuggets to the next level. Pick up a 5 or 10 count of nuggets today. And don't forget to add one of the new items from Taco Bell's Luxe Value menu with 10 items for $3 or under. The Luxe Value menu at Taco Bell delivers bold, irresistible flavor, and crave-worthy items at unbelievable prices. Nobody delivers everyday value and supports your home team teams like Taco Bell. Live Mas at Taco Bell. That's awesome. Great stuff there. So how do you go from a CU journalism student to being on CBS Colorado?
You know what? You got to grind. It is a huge journey to be able to be there. And, part of the journey was actually I was the pregame and postgame host for a Buff Stampede for a couple of years with News Radio KOA. And so, long and short of it, a lot of odd jobs, internships at Mile High Sports, Broomfield Event Center while it was still up, to even doing work at News Radio KOA, working at Channel 7. Behind the scenes, doing video editing and web content producing from there, even doing some work for Buff Stampede as well. I remember one time we did a story, recapping one of the spring practices. And one thing that really helped me was just the importance of networking. And that's what I would tell to any young man, is just or any young man, young woman, right? Is the importance of being able to branch out your network and to be able to go and talk to people. The way that I got to Channel 4, frankly, was as I was working at KOA, I had some interest in doing TV. And so I reached out to Tim Whelan. He is the general manager of the station in Denver and also in Los Angeles. And, he said, "Hey, we may have a spot for you." And that spot didn't happen that day. But 2 years later, there was an opportunity for me to be able to do, the Friday show where I was previewing a Bronco game, and then Monday morning I would recap a game. That went from doing that to doing stories on the web to then once the George Floyd protest happening to him asking me, "Hey, have you ever anchored before?" And I'm not going to say no, but I've never, did news anchoring before. And so from doing that to being an anchor, and then also transitioning now to doing morning reporting as well. And so it has been one of those things where it has been a long journey, but it's been such a beautiful, beautiful walk of faith, perseverance, and learning how to be able to persevere through the tough times, persevere through times where you didn't see it. I don't know how this is going to happen, and to see it finally come through and to be there. I think this is my 8th year of being at Channel 4, has been an awesome experience.
Great stuff. And I know if I go to the gym at 5, 6 in the morning, I'm going to be doing some lifts, and I'm going to look up to the TV and see Justin on
That's
there,
right.
because and I don't know where you're going to be. You might be in Idaho Springs, where I
Yes.
have to ask you about this.
Yes.
If no one has seen this, you were out in Idaho Springs doing a story on somebody that was wanted for a hit and run, correct?
No. He was wanted for robbery. So
Robbery.
he was, so this guy was, so full story, which is awesome. But I'll try to edit it down as much as possible. So I get the call in the morning. So mind you, I wake up, for those who are interested, our show starts at 5 o'clock in the morning. I wake up at 2:30, 2:15, 2:30, and I'm at the station at 3:30. So as I'm driving to work, I get a call from our executive producer, and she tells me, "Hey, we need you to go to Idaho Springs. They're looking for police are looking for this individual who's been, robbing, homes in the area for the last couple of weeks. We have video, and so just head up there. We'll give you some information and go from there." Cool. Well, as you know, as a journalist, is that your job is to inform the public. That's really what we're here to do. We're here to inform the public. So I called up, I think it was Silver Springs Police Department. And so I called them up around 6 o'clock and I said, "Hey, can I get a description of who this person was? We have the video, but let me just get a little bit more of a description." So mind you, stick with me. He's 5'10, 5'11, 6 feet tall, wearing tactical gear. I could see the video, clearly a black man, thin build. Okay, cool. So around 6:55, I go on air and I say, "Hey, A, B, C, and D. Oh, by the way, here's a description of the man. 5'10, 6 feet tall, thin build, wearing tactical gear. If you see him, please call police because don't confront him because police say that he's armed." Okay, perfect. As I get done doing that, literally the moment that I get off air, I turn around and I see my photographer, his eyes are kind of like trailing away. And so I naturally turn around and I'm like, "Yo." And my first thought is, "Hey, put the camera on this guy." And the reason why I say that is because I don't know if that's the individual who we're supposed to, who's the, the suspect, but I say, just put the camera on him because you just never know. It could be a one in a million shot, right? Well, so my photographer and I would go back and forth, and I'm like, "Is that him?" And then I call my station, and I said, "Hey guys, I think we may have found the person that we're talking about." I think he walked right behind me during my live shot. They're like, no way. And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, hey, can one of you guys call the police? And they're like, no. They're like, Justin, you literally told people on public to call police if you see him. And so I'm like, all right, I guess it's a good idea. Maybe I need to go and do that, right? So no joke, I call the police after my 7 o'clock hit. I go from there, and then after that, I look back and I'm like, oh my goodness, the police come 15 minutes later and they say, hey, remember the guy that you were just talking about? Remember that individual? Well, guess what? That was him. You caught him. It's like, what? So it was one of the craziest stories ever to be able to be a part of it, a once in a lifetime opportunity. And I'm so glad that that everyone is safe and sound from there, but definitely a memory that will last a lifetime.
Should have been looking around a little bit. I'm sure you guys had a pretty big camera there, right?
Oh yeah. No, and what's funny about it is it wasn't just us that were there. There were several other stations that were
Oh my
there too.
gosh.
So Channel
What did
31.
he need to go to the convenience store for that morning?
Let me tell you this. Let's call it what it is, okay? How many black people at 7 o'clock in the morning are going to be in Idaho Springs just moseying around, right? I'm like, what are you doing? And so he did that, and it was just one of those weird stories. And the best part about it was, a friend of mine, a coworker of mine, sent me a message, and I was on a World Star Hip Hop. I was also on a country music station. The story got picked up in Florida, and I'm like, how the heck do I go from World Star Hip Hop to a country station in Florida in 1 week with this story? You're thinking like I have to do hard journalism. No, I just need a crook to walk right behind me during a live shot. That's how I get famous. So that's how it was.
Is that the craziest moment of your journalistic career
100
to this
percent.
point? Yeah, it's
It
gotta be, right?
it's up there, man. It is the craziest moment I've ever had. I mean, I've had some serious moments too, right? Especially when you're doing news. I was the first journalist from Denver, in Colorado Springs, during the Club Q shooting. So you go from waking up in the morning and driving all the way down to the Springs, and it's like, hey, this is the information that's going on, and you're updating everything as it goes. And the person that I actually interviewed that day for a story in the evening news was actually a person who was inside of Club Q as that happened.
Wow.
And so you go from like the highs of a story like I had there in Idaho Springs to the other side where you're talking about, people dying inside of Club Q and the ramifications of that too. And so, yeah, it's been a topsy-turvy deal, but that's what you sign for in this business.
This is why you're Emmy nominated. What did that mean to
Right.
be Emmy nominated?
I remember a friend of mine, Dylan Thomas, who is one of our colleagues, sent me a text and he said, take a look. You've been nominated for a sports Emmy. And I said, shut up, dude. And at the time, I was a freelancer. So it was the coming in 2 days a week and doing my thing, sports wise. I didn't think that I did enough to be able to be on there. Once I saw it, I was over the moon, and it was really a moment of validation. And you know this, Adam. We all need different checkpoints in our life where we look around and say, am I truly doing the right thing? Like, is this really, am I really doing what I'm gifted to be able to do? And to be able to have that validation alone, I knew I was like, you're in the right area. You're in the right industry. You're doing the right things, and to keep on going. And so, to be able to be nominated for a sports Emmy is just truly a dream come true. Now, the next step is to be able to go and win an Emmy. That would be definitely awesome to be able to do.
I remember shortly after the birth of your first child, you walked into the press box at I think it was Invesco back then, and it was for the Rocky Mountain Showdown. It looked like you hadn't slept in about a week, and you now have two kiddos, young kiddos at home, right?
Yeah,
Correct?
Brooke and Alexander, 6 and 3 years old.
You said you're waking up, what, 2:30, 3 in the morning?
Look, and those kids, they don't have a watch, so they
Yeah,
wake up
I know.
right on
I'm
time.
worried about you, Justin.
Yeah, I'm worried about me too, to be honest. But you know what? It's there's no greater joy than to be able to raise kids. And trust me, there's a lot of other different things, right? You could talk about finances, right? Childcare costs are ridiculous. Like, childcare is a mortgage
Yes.
payment in itself, right? You could talk about the late nights and the crying, the diapers, all these other different things. But it's those sweet moments where my daughter gives me a hug and says, I love you, Dad. Usually that follows with, "Now can you give me something to eat?" "Yes, I could do that for you, babe. I love you." But it's those sweet moments where I'm able to go and raise my son and to be able to go and play games with my son. That's what's really awesome about it too. And then to be able to truly, truly raise them from the ground up of, "Hey guys, this is what it means to be a hard worker. Like this is what it means to be able to go and put your best foot forward." Those are what makes it all worthwhile. You know, we'll be able to go in. Do a lot of great things in our career, but our best resume is going to be our kids. And so for me, I never want to be a guy who is full of awards and have no relationship with my son or my daughter. So it's extremely important for me to be able to build that bond with them, even if I might be sleep deprived in the process.
All right, I'm just trying to look out for you,
That's
Justin,
right.
but
Thank you.
I know you're a great dad. That was never going to be a question with you.
Right.
So we've had quite the roller coaster ride in Boulder the last 3 years.
Yeah.
We're going to year four of the Coach Prime era, and this is probably the pivotal year, right?
It is. It is. It's the pivotal year, not only for Coach Prime, but also for how about the program as well of the University of Colorado. You know, we're looking at a year now where, I mean, you could, and you said it before, one of your shows, which I absolutely love, was that he has earned the right to have a mulligan year. And that last year was that year, right? When, you know, you bring in a lot of talent, it is what it is in a transfer portal, and it just didn't work out. And one of the main things was, hey, maybe you didn't grab the pieces that you want because you were dealing with cancer. So now you're back. Now you have an opportunity to grab all the talent that you can, and that you were looking for. And now you also have a quarterback that on paper is a freshman, but we know it's pretty much a redshirt freshman. Oh, he's a redshirt freshman, excuse me. And you're going to truly see, okay, now what is this team going to look like when, you know, Shedeur Sanders isn't there and when Travis Hunter isn't there, right? What would this team be? I'm really excited to see how this team will be able to really go up perform this season.
And obviously, it's tough navigating this new era of college football. As somebody that I would imagine in your era as a walk-on, you didn't get any of those frills, like in terms of training table, right? That
No,
those guys
I
get.
did. Actually, I was a walking violation. If you look back in 2005, we actually weren't supposed to go walkouts. We're supposed to eat at training table, and we were allowed to in many respects. And so there was an issue with that, which kind of shows the difference in the day, right? You have kids who are talking about NIL deal, and I'm just trying to get a burger, right? from training table. And so things have changed a lot.
So the NCAA kind of dropped the ball back in the day, right? I mean, how do we fix college football going forward? Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I think the number one thing is somebody has to be the grown up in the room. I mean, there's nobody who's the grown up in the room right now. It is, this is what happens when leadership goes all hands off. And when you don't have any leadership, then you just have kids being able to leave whenever they want. We always know that coaches can go at any time that they want, but you have the transfer portal whenever. You have the calendar in college football that is ridiculous to the point that you're playing games. The championship game, the national championship game is happening while other schools are going through the second semester, the spring semester. Like, that's ridiculous, right? And so a lot of things need to happen. The number one thing I would say is this, is that you have to find some sort of commissioner. And on the other side is you have to go in. Look, kids are being paid. It is what it is now. And so the days of saying that this is amateur athletics is just nonsense. Like, get past that and let's go and make sure that these kids truly have a seat at the table to be able to have some bargaining power. And that's the way that you go and save college football. Because the one thing that college football has over the NFL is that you have a team like North Dakota State that just went from FCS to FBS. Well, they have a chance to be able, especially with NIL and the money that they have up there in North Dakota. They have a chance to technically find themselves in the college football playoff, right? Well, the NFL cannot say that they have a team in North Dakota, for example. So you truly have a sport that is for the nation, and everyone in the nation can be able to go and celebrate. You got to be able to make sure you find a way how to not kill that golden goose and to protect this sport, and make sure you do so by keeping the young men and young women in mind who help fund this sport with their blood, sweat, and tears. And also on the other side, make sure that adults in the room are doing the right things, not just thinking about their pocketbook, but also helping out these young men and women and to save the sport as well.
Yeah, you nailed it. Leadership and protecting the sport, because it when and that's part of the thing, is that they're banking on the fact that the TV ratings are still great, because it is just an aesthetically pleasing sport. It is so fun to just come home from whatever errand you just ran, to throw on the TV to check the score of whatever game you want to check in, and just watch 30 minutes of it. It's just such a beautiful game.
Well, Adam, if I may, I went to the Peach Bowl for my birthday. I'm 40 now, by the way, Adam. So, I mean,
Oh
wow.
my goodness, man, you're making me feel really old
Brother,
now.
the body hits different right now, okay? But I went there to Atlanta for the Peach Bowl, and to see the Indiana fans who are like, look at us, and the nicest fans ever, by the way, and the way that they were able to just come together. By the way, Indiana fans have a lot of money too. Like, don't let them slip on that. They got bread for days. But to see how everybody was able to come together just shows the power of college football, and that there's going to be another Indiana. Hopefully that'll be Colorado this year, but there's going to be another school that traditionally is not a power, and they're going to be able to have a really good season, and you're going to see fans come together in droves, alumni come together. That's what college football has the power of doing. And as much as the NFL is, yes, the number one sport in the land, there's different pockets in the country that college football can be able to do and bring people around. And so I just hope that people really go and put their hands together, really find a great plan to really go and highlight that, rather than find different ways to divide it through transfer portal, NIL, and all these other different things. Not saying that NIL is bad. Obviously, it's great, but somebody has to, again, be the adult in the room.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You talked about being part of Colorado's program when y'all went down and won the Houston Bowl. The last bowl victory for the Buffaloes, right?
Yeah, Joel Klopfenstein had a great day, man. Had an 80-yard catch and run. That brother was big too, man. 6'4", 255.
Physical specimen right
Lord, have
there.
mercy. Great story, by the way. So again, I'm trying to gain weight as a walk-on, and I remember in my locker the biggest tub of creatine I've ever seen in my life. And I look over and I'm like, who put this thing in there? It was great, by the way. And I was like, oh. Joe Klopfenstein, he was like right across, the way from me in the locker room, and he was like, "This should take care of your weight problem." And I'm like, "Thank you, Joe. I could be 6'4", just like you too." So, it was just one of those fun memories I have with a second round pick who went to the NFL.
Creatine is still in, right? I think back in those days, it was kind of like we were kind of teetering, like, because the body naturally creates creatine. And they were wondering back then, I remember this because I was taking that back in college, because it really does help you get through workouts and recover quicker, that maybe our bodies would stop creating creatine if you start shoving it down in your throat every day. But I think it's held up to this point, right?
It has held up pretty well. I
Yeah.
still think I have that big tub somewhere around this house too.
Okay.
It was ridiculous.
Thank you, Joe
That's right.
Klopfenstein.
It's awesome.
So Buff Nation was together late in your tenure there, kind of splintering at the end of that. 73 was rough in that Big 12 championship game. And we saw it in 16, where people really rallied together as Buff Nation. We saw it in 24. And goodness, the Travis Hunter Heisman Trophy campaign was just unbelievable. Just what a great stretch for Colorado football. How do we reunite Buff Nation going forward? I know there's different factions that have different opinions here and there. Is it only down to wins and losses? Is that what it comes down to?
Life can't be about wins and losses, and I get that. You're paying a coach top tier money, at Coach Prime, and so yeah, don't get me wrong. He may be graded, in that side, but from a fan perspective, number one, with the way that the transfer portal is, and we've seen guys leave, right? Jordan Seaton, for example, and other guys who have left the program that we thought would be embedded in the program for years. Really get to know and love the guys who are here, even if it's for an eight month stretch. And really appreciate guys who are in the uniform, because that's the way that the rules are now with the transfer portal. So I would say the first thing that you do is you truly, as a fan, be able to find different pockets, different ways to support these young men. That's the number one that you could be able to do. And some of the things is just a positive word. Adam, there was a career event that was done at the University of Colorado, and I was blessed to be a part of it. And as I'm talking to, these young men, these football players, I can't tell you the number of players who came up to me and said, "Oh yeah, this is my first week on campus." And I'm like, this is crazy to me that this is just your first week, and a lot of these guys are going to be gone, just the way that how college football is nowadays with the transfer portal. So I would say this is that the number one thing is that the years of having guys stick around for 4 or 5 years may have gone away in many respects, but you still get your certain pockets of guys who'll be able to do so. But if they are in uniform for that season and they're representing the University of Colorado, then you go and support these guys through thick and thin. That's the number one thing that I would be able to say, because at the end of the day, they're still 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old, 22-year-old young men trying to figure out life as they're playing this sport that a lot of money is thrown out to them right now. So please be able to go and support them. Be loud, be obnoxious at Folsom Field, make it a great home field advantage. And, try to do everything you can to be a light when you're in the stands, when you're online. Do your best to be that light, because they see it and it does affect them. And you have a chance to be able to go and be that light to help them get over the hump. And so, if it is to give $5 to a collective or to an NIL fund that will be able to go and help get a better athlete, then please do so. But the one thing that you can't do, and I understand we're all fans and fans, fanatics, or whatever, right? Keep a lot of the comments to yourself. Like, keep a lot of the disparaging comments I would recommend to yourself. And find ways how to be a light to these young men, and in different sports to young women as well.
There's definitely a lot of negativity out there, and you mentioned that you just turned 40. I'm 46. Like, we grew up in an age where you didn't have this, and there's part of me that I think every generation feels this way, that they feel like their time was the best time to come up. But like, yeah, some of the stuff these kids have to deal with nowadays, like, again, your brain is not fully formed as an adult until you're 25. And so you're having to navigate all this stuff. And so I do think there is, despite this NIL, and even that adds to it, Justin. Like, you got people that are in these people's lives that are a lot of times leading them in the right direction, but sometimes the wrong direction. And it's a lot to navigate through as an 18 to 22 year old, to your point.
And you have agents who are taking what, 15 to 20% out
Yeah.
of an NIL deal, and so everybody's trying to take. But what's going to make the Colorado Buffalo experience and what's going to make us as alumni and fans different is that we're going to give. And I know that we all want to see national championships. Hey, that's important. We won it before, but let's be known for what we give to these young men. Let's be known for that rather than obviously so many other avenues that people are trying to take away from these young men.
One thing I will say that's very, very, very positive, even outside of just the football staff, and I think Brendan Marion coming in as a new OC is going to be exciting. That's going to be creative. It's going to be something where you're going to see stuff that you haven't seen at Folsom Field in a minute. So it's going to be fun to see that. But I had a chance to talk to both Rick George and Fernando Lovo. The baton is being passed off in such a great way. I don't know, Justin, if you've got a chance to meet Fernando yet, but the Colorado's program is in really good hands going forward with him.
I absolutely love to hear that. Fernando Lobo, he, comes from New Mexico. My wife, interestingly enough, is a graduate of New Mexico, where for some reason, she still believes that everybody is a Lobo. I've never seen that before, but whatever. I even asked her, what is a Lobo? She has no idea. So whatever. But I will say this, if for any Buffs fan who has any concerns about the direction of the football program, take a look at what happened at New Mexico. New Mexico wasn't bad. They are under garbage. They've been that way for years. Fernando Lovo comes in, hires another coach, right? And they were able to have their best season in years. And frankly, should have been in the Mountain West Championship, lost that to a tiebreaker. The same things that he's going to bring that worked for him in New Mexico, he's going to bring those same things here to the University of Colorado as well. So you can rest assured that the University of Colorado will be in great hands. Rick George isn't going anywhere either, right? He's still going to be around, and that's going to be a great resource to be able to go and help out Fernando Lovo in different ways as well. But to be able to have an AD that has been able to go and find ways how to be able to win in one of the toughest places in the nation in New Mexico, to be able to also have a really good basketball team too, right? So you think about what Tab Boyle is having, right, to deal with. He's going to help out the basketball program too. But also don't forget about this too. I know we're talking about football. The soccer team had one of its best seasons in years, right? Volleyball got to the NCAA tournament, right? Women's lacrosse beat the number two ranked team in the nation in Northwestern at Northwestern, won that 10-9. So when you think about all the great things that are happening at CU and what Fernando Lovo is able to go and walk into, you can really go and smile from there. Don't let anybody tell you that things are going well in Boulder. Things are going fantastic in Boulder. And you just wait down the line to see just how much better it's going to be under his leadership.
We just need a winning football season and all will be right in the world,
That's
Justin.
right.
I kept you longer than I was planning to, but I knew once we started catching up, it was going to kind of venture into some different avenues of topics. And I appreciate you, man. I always look forward to seeing you. I think, yeah, it's been a few months since we've run into each other, but you pop into Boulder quite often.
I do. I've been to a lot of football games and I love it. I just love to be, it's a blessing to be an alum. It's a blessing to be a letter winner. But it's also awesome to be able to go and represent the black and gold on air, right? On TV, on radio. Wherever I go, just know that I carry the black and gold with me. And so it's awesome to be able to do. And I can't wait to see what happens this season in football, guys. It should be exciting. And it's going to start on Thursday in Atlanta. So come on,
Yeah.
baby. Buff Nation, we need you.
All right, Justin Adams, forever Buff and a great dude. Definitely check out his work with CBS Colorado. Thank you, Justin. I really appreciate you, man.
Adam, always a pleasure, brother. Love you. Be blessed.
All right, and I appreciate everybody out there for tuning in.